The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 510. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. I would like to say real quickly thank you to all the folks who contacted me about episode 509. It got a lot of rave reviews, folks finding the last couple of entries absolutely hilarious. And if you haven't listened to the episode, you need to. It's basically my pals from the Three Geeks podcast are going to battle each other in a unique trivia game that revolves around Hallmark holiday movies. That's all I'll say. I appreciate all the kind words and the compliments. It was really awesome. And again, I appreciate it so much. All right, but you know what? Enough about last episode. Let's talk about this episode. Joining me is a illustrator and comic book creator. His name is Jimmy Gigrich. I met him at CXC this past year. And it was really funny because he said that he was from Baltimore. And of course, I had to make a joke about The Wire. And he didn't get it. And so he revealed to me that he had never watched The Wire. And here I am, just an idiot, a goof that thinks that everybody that lives in Baltimore has seen The Wire. But anyways, I really honestly was infatuated with his style of art. It's a real unique art style. And we're definitely going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, of course, his new project, I Live in Your Walls. As well as many other projects. The dude is super talented. He's had a lot of really cool projects. And I can't wait for you to hear all about them. So before we get too far along here, I'd like to go ahead and thank a couple of sponsors for making this episode a reality for each and every one of you. I'd like to start off with the newest sponsor of the PVD Cast. Of course, I'm talking about Courtney614 Online Sales. If you need great deals on women's fashions, health and beauty, and many other things, then just look no further than Courtney614. You can find her at all those major reselling sites like eBay, Whatnot, and Poshmark. Simply look for Courtney614, and that's spelled C-O-R-T-N-E-Y 614. Or some sites, you will see it Courtney_614, in the same spelling, obviously. So get some fabulous deals, and if you do indeed do business with Courtney, please let her know that you heard about her endeavors right here on the PVD Cast. And now to talk about the old school, the OG sponsor of this great show is, of course, World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. You name it, they got it. They have you absolutely covered for your comic book fandom. So if you're in Central Ohio, you owe it to yourself to stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But you can also check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address. And they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. And I'd like to thank both these great sponsors for their help and patronage. It really means a lot to me, and I really, really thank them with all my heart. Again, you guys are awesome, and I appreciate you so much. All right, with that being said then, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Jimmy Gigrich.
Hey,
Ladies and gentlemen, this evening I'm sitting down with an illustrator, a comic creator, an all-around pretty nice guy, Jimmy Gingrich. Jimmy, how are you, man?
Good. I'm doing good.
So I wanted to start off real quick with the discussion about your art style. Because to let the people know at home, at CXC this past year, I ran into you and we talked a little bit. And I don't think that I had the opportunity to tell you, but you know, your display with your artwork drew me right in. Like, awesome. I don't know, there's something about it. How would you describe it for somebody that's listening to this podcast? What is your art style all about?
I would say it's bright, veiny, sweaty, lots of eyeballs popping out of heads, big teeth and messy, like messed up gums and drool and muscles and monsters and warrior women and all kinds of stuff. It's very like, I think like over the top. I best compare it to kind of like Ed Roth, like Rat Fink stuff by way of like Frank Frazetta by way of Japanese black and white horror manga, I guess is kind of the way that I would like describe it.
How did you develop your style?
All these things that I just described, I like.
Okay. Okay.
I grew up looking at like, you know, Rat Fink, you know, like Ed Roth, like, you know, custom car stuff. I was really into that when I was a kid. My dad showed me a bunch of like Frank Frazetta stuff when I was like a little kid as well. But yeah, I like, you know, every like kind of more like extreme sort of expressive, over the top sort of like art styles and everything is something that I really have just gravitated towards just personally in terms of my taste. And so I kind of, I don't know, take all that stuff, kind of run it, you know, through a filter and then it comes out in my hand, I guess, you know?
Okay. Well, let's talk about one of your comics. Let's talk about Fight Frogs. Can you give the listeners at home a little synopsis of that project?
Yeah, Fight Frogs is my kind of like I loved Ninja Turtles when I was a kid. I loved knockoffs of Ninja Turtles though, Street Sharks, Biker Mice from Mars, you know, SWAT Cats, even like all that stuff I love. So this is kind of like my love letter to like knockoffs of Ninja Turtles specifically. And so it's about these three like frogs who live in like a post-apocalyptic wasteland, sort of like battling with, you know, other animal man gangs over like turf or, you know, stupid stuff like having like flex offs or, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's very bright, over the top. It's probably my like more like funny, less serious of like the comics that I do.
And if I did my research correctly, first edition, the first issue is sold out. Is that correct?
Yeah, at the moment, it's I've had that series for quite a while. I think it just turned, I think it probably turned 10. I haven't done a third issue yet. I keep talking about it, and I just get distracted with like other projects and stuff. I do really really want to do a third one though. But I published that way back. I want to say it was like more than 10 years ago, 2012 or something like that. And so it's gone through a number of like printings, but the currently. I am sold out. Yes, I should be getting more in soon. It's just a matter of you know, getting some more made.
But you do have issue two readily available.
Correct. Yeah, I got plenty of issue two. I'd also say too that they're pretty like not separate from one another, but they kind of have their own self-contained stories. It's sort of like a bad guy of the week type of deal. And so if you don't read the first one, but then you read the second one, you'll still be able to get it. It's still goofy. Like I think you mostly come from the jokes. You're not necessarily coming because the story is like super duper deep or anything like that.
Well, going back to talking about your art and how it's very unique in its own way, I read this and I said it makes sense that you had an opportunity to work on a Madballs comic.
Yeah.
And that was a blast from the past because I haven't thought about Madballs in a long time. Now, I'm a little older. I didn't have them, but my nephews had them. So, gotcha. You know, so I was familiar with the IP. How did you get the opportunity to work on that project?
I was asked. I got contacted by Lionforge was the publisher on that. They hit me up kind of almost out of the blue. I was at the time working on stuff for Boom, who handled a lot of the Cartoon Network shows. So I was a pretty regular contributor to the Uncle Grandpa comic. I don't know if anybody remembers Uncle Grandpa, but I was doing that pretty regularly. I think that's how they saw me. I was also doing stuff for like Adventure Time and regular show and all that. But they hit me up, and that was like a dream job for me. Madballs, I should have said as well, that's definitely an influence on my style. Like, I loved Madballs when I was a kid. I remember like just spending hours and hours and hours looking at the toys and like all the different sort of like gross meaty bits and the stitches and all that kind of stuff I loved. And so that was like a dream job for me. And it was a ton of fun to work on as well. I did a cover for it, and then they had me do a little sort of like a backup story, because there was like a main sort of, I think it was like a 4-issue run or like a 5-issue run or something. And then they had a bunch of artists, you know, do like single stories at the end and everything. They picked a bunch of, we were all weirdos. Like, there was definitely people, it was like people like me who like just kind of like do our own weird kind of gross sort of like subversive thing. And everything that turned, like, that people did for it was great. It was a really fun project to work on, for sure.
Okay. Did you have a bunch of the Madballs as toys as a kid?
Oh yeah. I loved them. I loved them. They had, I can't remember the names anymore. Slobulous, Lockjaw, something like that. I remember the one that I remember the most though was I had the purple hand with an eyeball in it. And I remember that was the one in particular that I would study as a kid, because the hand was chopped off and they showed like its bones sticking out or it's like veins or something like that. And I remember just like looking at that and then memorizing that. And to this day, when I draw stuff like that, it's probably because of the way that that looked on that toy, to be honest.
Well, like I said, I haven't thought about those in forever. So that was, that was a nice nostalgia trip for me.
There was like that little revival. They did those, and then they it was like Madballs versus Garbage Pail Kids comic, I think, as well.
You know what, it just clicked in my head when you were talking. I was gonna ask you if you were a big fan of Garbage Pail Kids.
100%. Yeah, that was Garbage Pail Kids when I was a kid. I remember that those were like, I don't know, like if you had one of those, that was like having like contraband, like just any of them. I remember in school they were like banned, but like we would kind of trade them like under the desk and stuff. I remember my parents, were really just like not into those at all, but I remember the one card that I had, I can't remember the name of the kid, but it was the kid with he had a faucet on his head and he was like turning the knob and blood was pouring out into a cup. He looked like a bartender or like a waiter or something like that. I remember that one like specifically. I think I showed that to my dad, and he reacted the way a parent maybe should react to it. That was actually, going back to the Madballs thing, I got to do, as a result of doing that, they brought a bunch of the artists out to New York Comic Con, and we got to do like a signing for it and everything. And this kid came up to me, and he was like, "Listen, I love your artwork so much. My mom hates it. She thinks it's gross, but I really like it a lot." And that was the best compliment I could have gotten. Like artwork that your mom hates is like something I've always strived to. And, it was nice to hear that, especially coming off the back of doing the Madballs. Cause, they were something that definitely, I think was designed to make parents go like, ugh.
Well, I think just, you know, going off topic here for a moment, I think there was an era, especially in the late 80s, of gross out things. Because you had My Little Monster, or I think it was the blue monster that had the orange handcuffs. And then you had Garbage Pail Kids, and you had Madballs. And then you even had a little bit of like, Boglins. There's the ones I forgot about. Yeah, I was going to say, you even had some of that bleeding over, like, because I know Masters of the Universe had their slime contraption thing as well. So it seemed like it was the big deal. Like, all those toy executives got together and were like, let's make this be the era of, like, gross-out toys.
Yeah. I wish, like, it was, like, such a big thing. And that's just, you know, I was so into that when I was a kid. I wish that, if that happened again, I feel like I'd be a millionaire. At this point, I wouldn't have to like worry about like finding my next job or anything. I would just be like drawing like, I don't know, weird cheeseburger men throwing up on each other, and that would be the best toy.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about Death Knight. and the City of Stasis. So this is maybe, it's safe to say, a little bit of a more serious part of your work.
Yeah. It's a little bit more grim and serious. It's sort of inspired by like grim fantasy stuff, like Conan the Barbarian or like Elric, you know, that kind of stuff. Also, I'm a huge like 80s, like late 80s, early 90s, like anime nerd. So like very kind of like fantasy, grim, like grimdark anime stuff in there as well. I love stuff like Berserk or like Bastard or like that kind of stuff. So like there's a huge influence of that on Death Knight as well, for sure.
And I think by just from my own personal opinion, I think that it's really a unique choice to go all black and white with what I saw, you know, the samples that I saw on while I was doing research on your social media and whatnot, because I think it gives fans that idea that you're just not the Madballs, big, colorful, you know, type of dude, that you have levels. Is that probably a pretty safe, accurate description?
Yeah. I feel like that story's super bleak, and it ends on like such a bummer. There's funny parts in it. Like I always put humor into like everything that I do, at least, you know, in part. But I feel like that black and white kind of hatchy, scratchy, sort of like a little bit more messy, I would say, line work really kind of complements just how bleak and sort of scary the world is supposed to be. Like it's something where, you know, it's very Mad Max-ish, you know, where it just kind of feels as if like you're never really safe. And, you know, even if you're resting, it's not really like, you know, a full night's sleep or anything, because something could sneak in and, you know, bite you on the leg and poison you or something like that, you know? And so, that style, I feel like, complements that idea. I mean, I think it makes it feel a little bit more, makes you feel a little bit more on edge if you read it.
So you just mentioned you always try to fit in a little lightheartedness, a little funny, a little ha-ha.
Yeah.
How do you go about determining that this is what I want to do, even though it is more the comedy aspect of this very serious book? At what point, I guess, in the creative process do you have that conversation with yourself?
Yeah, I mean, some of it, I think, just kind of comes naturally a little bit. Some of it, though, I feel like it's either kind of like maybe set up to something that's a tonal shift or like a reprieve from something that's maybe a little bit more dark. You know, I think that people kind of react a little bit more viscerally if something shocking happens after they've kind of been like disarmed a little bit and they've, you know, like laughed at something, or vice versa. In my newest I Live in Your Walls book, the one that I came out with not that long ago, something really shocking and violent happens in the book, and I purposely made it like disturbing. I you know, would say it's probably the most disturbing thing I've ever drawn. I felt bad when I was drawing it. And then after all this stuff happens and this sort of like gruesomeness happens, it immediately cuts to like a big funny burp just because I wanted something that would maybe sort of like lighten the mood a little bit. And like, it kind of like that part of the story ends as like the guy's sort of like telling it and everything. And, you know, I just wanted to sort of like lighten the mood. So that's the way that I put it in. If there's going to be something a little bit more kind of like shocking and a more serious story, or there's going to be like action or violence or something like that, I like to kind of like set it up maybe with a little bit of a joke, or again, sort of like circle back around and make something a little bit more kind of like lighthearted, follow up, you know, right after it or something like that.
Okay. Staying on the idea of the creative process, what steps do you take when you're starting a project? Like, do you start coming up with just rough ideas and start sketching them out, or do you go with a script first, or how do you start the process?
Yeah, I would say that it's rough ideas mostly, and I like sketch them out and everything. I back when I was doing I would say more steady comic work, I was doing different things at the time, you know, professionally. I was delivering Chinese food for a while when I graduated college, and I was like a dog walker for a while. So I had a lot of downtime to just kind of like turn my brain off or like think about things while I was just like doing mundane stuff. And so that's when I would kind of like formulate my ideas and everything. And so I still do that to this day. I'm just not like driving around all the time, or like, you know, driving from house to house walking dogs. When I have like downtime, if I'm sort of like driving, like driving tends to be a good time for me to think and everything. I'll usually think through ideas, or like even when I'm laying, you know, about to go to bed, I'll like think through my ideas and stuff. I never really write out like scripts. I like to kind of do everything on the page, not on the page, like just go directly into it. But I like to thumbnail everything out and sort of like work out the ideas and the story and the beats and everything. And then, you know, sort of like refine it as I like take things to final.
Well, let's talk about, you mentioned it, I Live in Your Walls. Can you give the listeners a little bit of a summary on that project?
Yeah, that one's, that's my newest one. It's my grossest comic, hands down. Both in terms of like just, I don't know, like visceral, gory, sort of like gross stuff, but it's also a little bit more, I would say, like shocking or serious or kind of like scary than my other stuff. But the basic premise is that it's this creepy little guy shows up at people's houses when he knows someone in the house is going to die a violent death. And he basically tells you the story of sort of like the person and what happened and sort of like, you know, what killed them, if it's another person or if it's a monster or something like that. All while like hanging out inside of their like walls, or he often tells them the story while he's sitting in a dead body, splish splashing around in blood and eating maggots and stuff. So like I said, it's gross. but it's very like horror, like Japanese horror comic influenced, like Hideki Hino or Junji Ito, or you know, like any of those sort of like kind of like bigger names had a huge influence on that. A little EC Comics too, like, you know, Tales from the Crypt as well, I would say.
So no doubt, I guess it would be safe to say that horror movies are, you know, one of your hobbies if you you enjoy that genre.
Yeah.
Can I put you on the spot and ask you what are maybe three, maybe four of your favorites?
Yeah. In terms of like, so I love like garbage movies in addition to loving like good movies and stuff. In terms of like, I'll give you a couple of good ones and then a couple of like bad ones. Two good ones. I love the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I love John Carpenter's The Thing. I think John Carpenter's The Thing is maybe one of my top three movies of all time. I love that. But in terms of garbage, I love just like Italian horror. I love like bottom of the barrel stuff though. Like this movie Burial Ground, The Knights of Terror, is a zombie movie. I've got a big tattoo of it on my forearm. I got it when I was like, you know, 18 or 19. I love that movie so much. It's just so sleazy and grimy. The zombies in it look ridiculous. They have like really sort of like caked on like makeup and everything. It's a hit. I don't know if it's a hidden gem so much anymore, cause it's kind of gotten a little bit more attention, recently, but it's great. I also love, do you know Blood Freak? Have you ever heard of the movie Blood Freak before?
I've never heard of the Blood Freak.
It's from the '60s. It's billed as being the world's first pro-Christian anti-drug giant turkey monster gore film or something like that. It's crazy. It's about this dude that like, I don't know, he smokes pot and he goes insane and then he eats some turkey and then he grows a giant paper mache turkey head and he goes around drinking the blood of drug addicts and stuff. It's great.
Well, you know, since we're on this topic, I have to confess that I saw on your Instagram that you made a Thanksgiving t-shirt.
Yeah, I made an official Thanksgiving t-shirt. It was licensed and everything, yeah.
But I mean, it was filmed. I think most of it was filmed here in Central Ohio.
Yeah. I met the way that this is a funny story. The way that I ended up landing that was I was vending at the Gathering of the Juggalos back when I had a paper. Now, I guess disclaimer, I liked ICP fine when I was in middle school. I'm not a juggalo. That's not necessarily my thing. I thought it would be a fun experience because I used to travel all over the US setting up shop and like selling t-shirts and stuff at my own company. And so I was vending there and, you know, I was hanging out. And then the guy who was vending next to me, he was doing merch for one of the rappers that was there. He was talking to me and the whole time I was like, this guy looks really, really familiar. And then he was looking at my shirts and he was like, yeah, you know, I was in Thanksgiving. He was like the nerdy guy from Thanksgiving. And I was like, oh my God, I love that movie. It's so fun. Like, it's so goofy and everything. And then I was like, I really would be interested in doing a shirt for it. And then he hooked me up with the director and, you know, we did it. So, yeah.
Now, I must confess, me and my friends used to have bad movie night where we would go to the local video store and try to rent DVDs of bad movies. And sometimes we got hoodwinked. We got, oh, this is going to be terrible. And it was really good. We've had a few of those instances. We did watch Thanksgiving. We tried to watch the sequel, but the sequel is really tough to get through.
Yeah.
And We got about halfway through. We're like, this isn't even funny. Like, this
I appreciate what they tried. I think. It doesn't have the same impact, I would say, as the first one. The first one just cracks me up so much.
Yeah, I agree. The first one's a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I also would like to just throw out there too that I got a lot of mad respect for ICP. I'm not a fan, but
yeah,
they have lasted almost 30 years without like a major company behind them, yeah, or you know, it's all word of mouth DIY, and that shouldn't have happened. I mean, it shouldn't have happened that was successful, but here we are, almost 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, I it's not my thing. When I went there, I didn't know what to expect either. Like, I was a little worried, just to be honest. I'm into punk and metal and like that kind of stuff. Like, that's not my thing. And I didn't know how people were going to react to me being there, but they were all super nice. Like, it was great. I saw some of the craziest things I've ever seen in my entire life. And that was just me sitting there. Like, so much just like weird stuff was like walking past me all day long. When I got there, you know, I didn't really know what to expect. And, you know, growing up in punk and metal and everything, it very much just struck me as being a subculture, just kind of like any other kind of subculture. The people there were all super nice. They're all having a good time. So it was a lot of fun. It was one of my fonder experiences, I would say, as like a vendor for sure.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Jimmy for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, posters, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. You name it, they got it for your fandom. So you should check out the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is a web address, and they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for at WGComics. I'm going to ask you about your favorite heavy metal bands, because as you mentioned, it was on your website that you are, if I remember correctly, you run on horror movies, heavy metal, and slime.
Yeah.
So, who are some of your favorites in the world of metal?
I mean, I kind of run a gamut. I really like a ton of classic stuff. Like, I've loved Iron Maiden ever since I was a kid. Okay. Love Judas Priest, love Motorhead, like all that kind of stuff. I love like death metal though. Some of my like favorites. I mean the classics like Death and Obituary. I've got a Death tattoo and everything. But I like a lot of like weird stuff too. Like there's a band from Finland called Demilich, which I really like. There's a Japanese band called Intestine Balism that I really like. I like black metal. I like Beharit is another one of my favorite bands. I kind of run deep and weird. I like to find stuff that the band had an album that came out in like the 90s and then like they disappeared after that. And then like, you know, the album itself is just like airtight. It's like super solid. That's the kind of stuff that gets me like super duper excited. I've seen Cannibal Corpse a million times. I love Cannibal Corpse. But like that's not like, you know, like my favorite stuff. I like stuff that goes a little bit like weirder and deeper.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about Executioner and Friend. I guess it's kind of your like a buddy movie, a buddy cop movie, if you will.
Yeah. The premise, I was thinking like the way that I kind of came up with it was I wanted almost like an office kind of like workplace comedy that was set in a dungeon, basically like in Mordor, almost like evil sort of like, you know, fantasy sort of like empire kind of thing with two kind of like low level, almost like public servants. It's an executioner and his assistant. And his assistant's this big, like very overly sensitive guy made out of slime. Sort of like there are different like adventures and mishaps.
This ended up becoming a animated project because you got a couple of episodes with Adult Swim.
Yeah.
What was your feeling about working with somebody with an IP that you created? Was there some hesitation? Was there, you know, totally like, no, it's cool, man. I got this under, I got everything taken care of. Like, cause I just could see, you know, somebody comes and says, I want to do a podcast with you. And then there's always that, well, do I want my IP to go and be connected to that person?
Yeah. Right.
Was that something that can't cross your mind, or were you like totally, absolutely chill as can be with working with Adult Swim?
So it started off with Mondo Media were the people that they produced it first. And Mondo Media, if you don't know, they did like Happy Tree Friends back in the day. They've since gone on to like do other things. But it was a partnership between them and Canadian Animation Studio, who the Canadian Animation Studio were the ones that contacted me. And I was hesitant at first just because I didn't know what to expect. But it was also my first time ever working in animation or doing anything like that. And so I was very eager and excited to do it. I mean, I did so much on that show. Like looking back at it, so we did that about like 10 years ago. I don't know if I could keep up with the amount of work nowadays, now that I'm almost 40 and I need like 8 hours of sleep every night, all that kind of stuff. Because I was writing the scripts, I was storyboarding it, I was drawing every single background, I was doing every single character design, like turnaround and everything. I was directing the episodes, I was sitting in on the voice recording, I was doing like so much. So I fortunately was able to be very hands-on with it. So I feel like it feels very representative of my like humor and my style and all that kind of stuff. And I was fortunate enough to work with a great producer on it. This guy, Josh Bowen, he was very much like, you know, he helped me out a lot when it came to just like, you know, writing for TV is something that I had never done before. And so he was very helpful with that and like very helpful with like story suggestions. And, he was great, but he was also like, do your thing. Like we want you to be happy with this. It was a great experience. It was so much work. Like I was doing that. I was freelancing at the time. I was teaching at the time. So like that was all I was doing when we were, you know, making each episode. But, then later it got picked up and, Adult Swim aired it. It was on this show. I think it only aired in Canada called Night Sweats, which it aired in Canada cause it was like produced in Canada and everything. And we did like the 5 episodes of it. And I'm still very proud of them to this day. I think they're super funny.
I'm curious. You said you had to learn how to write for TV. Can you explain what does that mean for those folks that are listening at home?
Yeah. So it's different, I would say, in terms of like, you know, especially with like a short, like 5 minutes and everything. Like the script, maybe have to kind of like tighten, like come to a nice sort of conclusion in a way that I wouldn't necessarily do in like a maybe short comic, like for the shorts for Execute, because that's how it started off. It was a comic at first. And like the shorts were just sort of like little, maybe 4 to 10 pages each. The first one I ever did was Executioner. He was, you know, him and Friend were hanging out while Executioner's just casually chopping dudes' heads off. And they're talking about how Friend got dumped by his girlfriend and how like, you know, it sucks. And like, you know, she was cheating on him and that's a bummer, man. You want to go out and get some drinks later, as they're just like lopping guys' heads off and everything. And so that works just as like, I think it was like 5 pages or something. Turning that into like a 5-minute short or having it be more of this sort of like, you know, rising action, climax, blah, 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 like all that kind of stuff was something that I just was not as used to doing with that, especially with that like sort of, you know, world and those stories. He's greatly helpful with that for sure.
Okay, cool. Yeah. What was, besides just being so busy at this time in your life, was there any other challenges you faced, you know, while you were animating your project?
Yeah, I mean, there was stuff where I had to kind of learn a little bit to just back off when there were things that okay. I had it in my head that it should look exactly this way, or like we need to do this, when just the time or the budget or something like that, we just weren't able to do those things. And so I had to sort of like, you know, like get a little bit more acclimated to the sort of collaborative process with not just me and like an art director, because I've done that like a million times, or me and an editor or something like that. It's me, an animator, the voice actors, the blah, 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 like all these things where, you know, I kind of had to just sort of go with the flow a little bit. And I'm happy that I did that because it made me, I would say to this very day, like kind of chill, not like so like, you know, it needs to be my vision or it needs to be like exactly the way that I see it, because sometimes those things, I would say, just cloud your opinion of something that might just be good as it is or good on its own, you know.
Okay, all right, couple more questions here, Jimmy, then we'll wrap things up. What is, you said that Madballs was your dream project?
Yeah. All right,
but do you have any others?
Yeah, I would love, I haven't done anything with animation in quite some time. I would love to get back on like the train doing that kind of stuff. I spent a lot of time after Executioner and Friend pitching shows that never saw the light of day. Some of them made it like fairly far. We did like sort of like small animations for them and like that kind of stuff to kind of like sell them and everything. But the last one I worked on was maybe like 5-ish years ago. I think we started working on it maybe during the pandemic or maybe right before the pandemic. I can't remember. We got a lot of momentum behind it and then it just kind of fizzled, which that happens. The animation is kind of tough to work with or work in that industry is like somebody who's pitching, you know? But I would love to do something like that again, either pitching one of my comics and getting that animated or something like that. I really like I Live in Your Walls. You know, I'm currently working on the third volume of that like now. And that's something that like, you know, I'm going to keep going with. I have at least two more issues of it written. I would love to see that like animated, you know, even if we just make like a short or something like that. I would love to do that again for sure.
All right, let's talk about future projects. You mentioned the third installment of I Live in Your Walls. Do you have anything else coming down the pike, so to speak?
I've got like a big project that I'm sort of like chipping away at. I haven't really done too much in terms of sort of like drawing it or like, you know, anything like that. That's a larger project that I think I wouldn't do on my own. I like to self-publish my stuff, and I have been doing that, you know, for quite some time. I think that it's the kind of thing though that it would be long enough and it would be sort of like enough pages and everything that I would probably have to pitch it to like a publisher or something. I don't really have enough to say about it, like, you know, so it's a little under wraps at the moment. But it's something that I've been working on that like very much feeds into sort of like my tastes and sort of like the way that I like to tell like stories just in a like a larger, maybe more sort of like complicated sort of like format, I would say. A little bit more on like the Death Knight side of things, less sort of like goofy cartoony or like straight up horror, a little bit more kind of like violent, grim, adventure-y kind of stuff.
Okay, here's my last question. Would you ever do a project outside of your genres that you are already doing? You know, for an example, would you do a kid's book?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. Okay. Yeah. I'm very flexible when it comes to sort of like ways to apply like my, I guess, like voice or like my sort of like interests to like projects and everything. I've done, you know, we talked a lot about like my comics and stuff. I used to do editorial illustrations. I used to do drawings for Business Week and like LA Weekly. Those were like regular clients of mine and everything. I was drawing people in like suits, like, you know, I don't know, getting stressed out at their computers, stuff like that. I'm like super flexible though when it comes to that kind of stuff. That previous project that I was talking about, the one that sort of like fizzled out, we did a kid's book. I have the book. It's sitting, you know, on my computer, probably never to see the light of the day in the light of day. Cause you know, it just, the project never came to anything. We signed a bunch of like contracts and stuff. So like, I don't know if I can even like post those things at this point. But it was a kid's book. And it was definitely my vibe. Like it wasn't, you know, super cute or anything like that. It wasn't, you know, it was grimy. It was gross. It was like something I would have liked to have read when I was a kid back in like the 80s or 90s. And I'm super into like doing stuff that like pushes me out of my comfort zone. I like that a lot. So long as I get to have like a crumb of my voice still in it, you know.
All right, let's talk about your website, social media. Are you going to be anywhere? You know, as we're starting to see conventions start firing up again. Yeah. You know, let's run down those websites, the social medias and all that jazz.
Yeah. So you can find my website is ggillustration.com. That's where I post. This is my portfolio website. And then if you go there, though, there's also a shop link. I've got a shop where I sell my comics. I sell, prints. I also have big woven blankets of my art and everything like that. Like I got a bunch of different stuff. Socials, at @JimmyG_illustration on Instagram. And then, I think Jimmy G Illustration on like Facebook, you can find me there as well. And then, shows coming up, end of February, I'm going to be in Arizona for ASCAF, Arizona Comics Arts Festival. I've got a bunch of applications out. I don't know if anything I've heard back from. I applied to C2E2. I do C2E2. I try to do that every year and everything. So I'll very likely be at the Artist Alley there. And I'm trying to think what else. I'm always trying to do every indie show or something, you know, in the general sort of like East Coast, Midwest sort of area, sometimes going out, you know, all the way west and everything. So I'm sure I'll be around for sure.
Okay, and if you want to know what Jimmy's up to, follow him on Instagram and Facebook. There you go. Enough said.
Yeah.
Well, Jimmy, it's been a blast. Thank you so very much for sitting down and chatting with me tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was great.
With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Jimmy Gigerich, talking about his various different projects, both past and present and even future. And it's real fun to talk to Jimmy. He's a really cool dude, and I appreciate him taking some time out of his busy schedule to sit down and talk with me. So let me tell you where you can get in touch with me if you have a question or comment about this episode, or actually any episode for that matter. First of all, you can find me on Twitter. That's right, I'm still on Twitter. My personal handle over there is @PVDMVP. You can drop me a line over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads accounts. Just look for @PVDcast. And if you want to email me, you can email me as well. That's johnorlando@PVDcast.com, which is the email address. And now maybe you want to let some folks know where they can hear the show. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that as well. First off, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and probably the best place to get every single new episode. But, of course, it's available through all of those podcasting outlets and apps, so all you have to do is go to your favorite podcasting outlet or app, go into the search bar, put in PVDcast, sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And while we're talking about those apps and outlets, if you're listening through one of those, please rate and review. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm, and it lets those other companies, those outlets, those apps know that you're listening to the show as well. And heck, do one other thing, by the way. Don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVD Cast. But alas, there's one final way that you can hear each episode, and that is every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I do a little live Facebook broadcast. So there's three easy ways where you can hear each new episode, pvdcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and of course, Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, through the Facebook page, @PVDcast. All right, with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you very much for checking out this episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, stay safe and healthy.